call the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors' regular meeting of February 16th, 2022 to order. We'll start with a pledge allegiance, and I see former Director Sullivan in the crowd, and I was wondering, Ron, if you would come up and lead us in the pledge.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Do the roll call, please.
Yeah. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Pauly?
I'm here.
Director Records here. This is our first meeting using Zoom. Shayla, would you go over the information about that, please?
Yes. I will go over the guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press *9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing *6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Introduction of guests. April, do you have any introductions this morning?
We don't have any guests that have indicated their desire to speak this morning.
Okay. Item 1 is public comments. Any subject within the jurisdiction of EMWD, speakers are required to limit comments to 3 minutes. Any member of the public wishing to speak, please unmute by dialing *6. If you're having trouble hearing the presenters, please speak up. Does anyone want to speak? Okay, that takes us to item 2, public hearing. Approved Board of Directors division boundary changes.
Thank you, Director Record. We will start with the. We do have a presentation by our staff, Gordon Ng, but I will defer to your pleasure.
Okay, why don't I get the start the procedure, and then we'll have Gordon present. This is the time and place set for duly noticed public hearing to consider adjustments to the director division boundaries of the Eastern Municipal Water District as required under the Municipal Water District Law of 1911. Staff presentation will describe the proposed adjustments, and today will be an opportunity for the public to provide input on the adjusted director division boundaries and for the board to consider the adoption of said boundaries by resolution. I declare this public hearing open and would ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was posted in the public notices section of the district's website on January 28, 2022. In addition, notice of the public hearing was published on February 7, 2022 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the district service area.
I would ask a staff report overviewing the proposed updates to the director division boundaries. Gordon.
All right. Thank you. So good morning, board. So jumping right into it. The requirement to update our director division boundaries is set, as mentioned earlier, based on the Municipal Water District Law of 1911. And this law actually references the Elections Code, which notes that after each federal census, the divisions should be adjusted such that the divisions are as equal in population as far as practicable. The law also notes that there are additional factors that we could consider in adjusting these division boundaries, which are noted on the slide, but it includes factors such as topography, contiguity of territory, and community of interests within the divisions. So what I want to do now is step through the timeline that we've kind of taken through the redistricting process, and I'll give more detail on kind of individual steps in subsequent slides. So beginning in February of 2021, we presented a work plan for how we would go about this process to the board. And then followed by that in August, the redistricting data set was released by the Census Bureau that was delayed by everybody's favorite topic, the pandemic. And in November, we finished processing the initial results based on the data set that was released, and we presented those results to the Board Executive Committee, which was followed by a public hearing in December where three draft configurations were presented. And then based on the direction that we received from the board at that time, we've refined one of those configurations, and we're here in February doing our second public hearing where we have a configuration that we're going to recommend for adoption and our deadline to submit these adjusted boundaries to Riverside County comes in April. So first off, to summarize the results of the 2020 census, we can see that over the past 10 years, divisions 1 and 4 were our fastest growing divisions. They grew by 24% and about 20% respectively, which was well above the district average rate of about 15% growth overall. The divisions do remain relatively balanced in terms of population, but we are again recommending that we adjust the division boundaries just because we expect the growth to continue in divisions 1 and 4. And so we wouldn't want to get into a situation where the population gets too unbalanced. And so this table gives a summary of the demographic distribution in the divisions as they currently exist. So Division 3 is currently our largest division. Division 2 is currently the smallest division. And there's a table on the screen that shows the race and ethnicity distribution between the divisions. And so right now we have four majority Hispanic or Latino divisions, and this kind of demographic distribution will remain consistent in our recommended configuration moving forward. So to summarize the three configurations that we presented to the board in December, the common goal amongst all three divisions was to rebalance the population so that divisions 1 and 4 continue to have room to grow while remaining balanced in population. And this is because based on our data in terms of tracking where development is going to occur, we expect that those two divisions, which were the fastest growing divisions over the last 10 years, we expect that that will continue to be the case moving forward. And so we want to make sure that there's, again, room for those areas to grow without throwing the populations out of balance. The S1 configuration, we tried to achieve that while maintaining the existing boundaries where possible. So basically making minimum changes. The S2 configuration had the goal of trying to improve the contiguity of the different divisions, you know, where possible, straightening out boundary lines, that sort of thing. And then the S3 configuration, we considered the spheres of influence kind of as a proxy for communities of interest. And the results of those are summarized on this slide. Nothing very dramatic in terms of changes, but we did present those three configurations. And as I mentioned earlier, based on the feedback that we received in December, the direction that we got was to proceed with refining configuration S1 for adoption, which was the configuration with minimum changes to the existing boundaries. And just to summarize the changes that we made, so Division 1 changes were based on the changes made to the other division, since it's kind of in the middle there. Divisions 2 near Clinton Keith Road, Division 4 near the city of Paris, and Division 5 near Cactus Avenue were adjusted with the goal of balancing the population for the reasons that I described earlier. And then we also made a slight revision to the Division 3 boundary to reflect an updated boundary for the city of Hemet, which happened since the last time the division boundaries were updated. And so I have here a updated set of tables with the breakdown of the proposed division. So we see that Division 3 remains our largest division. And as we kind of targeted, the Division 4 is now our smallest division under the proposed boundaries, with Division 1 being very close to Division 4, but just slightly bigger. And the demographic pattern breakdown remains very similar. We retain the four divisions with the majority Hispanic or Latino population. And so, as I mentioned, we did not try to have zero deviation between each of the proposed division boundaries. Again, we expect our projections show that divisions 1 and 4 will continue being the highest growth divisions. We'll have most of the population growth concentrated there. And so there was, you know, because we were allowed to have some deviation, we kind of accounted for this. And again, with the goal of keeping the divisions balanced over the next 10 years. We were asked to make sure that we were in compliance with all the relevant statutes and legislation. And so these configurations were reviewed by legal counsel, and that was confirmed that we were meeting the requirements of the code. And so with that, our recommendation is to approve and adopt the resolution before you that adjusts the boundaries of each of the 5 divisions of the Eastern Municipal Water District. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions from board members? Director Pauly?
Yes, Director Record, yes. I would just like to ask legal counsel, I know they did an analysis of the districts, that we are in compliance with the Federal Voting Rights Act.
Yes.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
If staff have received any written comments on the proposed boundary revisions, I would ask the Secretary of the Board to provide copies thereof to the board.
Written comments have been received from 1 member of the public, and copies thereof have been delivered to the board.
Thank you. Are there any members of the public who wish to speak on this matter? If so, please come forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and present your comments. If you are tuned in with your computer, please use the chat feature to indicate that you would like to speak. If you're listening by phone, please press *9 to indicate that you would like to speak. Do we have any virtual attendees wishing to provide comments?
I don't have any online indicating they wish to speak.
Since there are no further speakers, I hereby declare the public hearing closed. Time we're ready to adopt the resolution to adjust the boundaries of the Director's Divisions of the Municipal Water District. Is there a motion to adopt this resolution? Moved by Director Armstrong and seconded by Director Corona. Shayla, would you please administer the roll call?
Yes. Director Record?
Yes.
Director Corona?
Yes.
Director Slauson?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Thank you, Gordon. Takes us to item 3, executive reports, the general manager's report.
Thank you, Director Record, members of the board. Good morning again. My report is included in your packet. Under items of ongoing issues, as the board may be aware, on February 8th, the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California held the first of a series of biannual budget workshops. As a floor, Metropolitan staff is proposing 2 consecutive years of 8% rate increases to cover the proposed revenue requirements. The primary drivers for this increase is a 5% catch-up for the suspension of the water stewardship rate. The other proposed 3% increase is attributed to several variables, including the lower projected water transactions, which, as you're aware, they're trending downward, and they are projected to be at 1.5 million acre feet per year by the year 2025 due to permanent water use efficiencies gained and new local water supplies brought on by member agencies. There are other drivers that are causing the proposed consecutive 8% increases a year that I've identified in my report. These figures, I should note, and the proposed rate increases do not include any potential expenditures related to the potential settlement of litigation with the San Diego County Water Authority. Subsequent workshops on the budget, on the proposed budget, will occur between now and April 12th, when the budget is scheduled to be considered for adoption. Our team, including finance, myself, Jolene, and others, will be very much engaged on this matter, as well as Director Record. I've also asked our finance team to update our financial model to better understand the implications of the proposed Metropolitan rate increases of 8%, specifically looking at treated, untreated raw water increases. Also under new and ongoing items, as I've reported before, on December 20th, we received $3.7 million from the State Water Resource Control Board to cover water arrearages. I just wanted to share with you that last week, staff processed those credits through the delinquent accounts, and letters were sent to those customers. Essentially, the letters identified the total delinquent account, the credits applied via the funds received from the state board, and any remaining balances that are due to EMWD. We have also directed customers to contact us to enroll in any payment plans for remaining balances that are due to avoid any potential disconnection of water service. We've also provided them with additional information and guidance relative to other assistance programs, including the low-income household water assistance program that is available to customers. Funds that were not credited to accounts, funds out of the $3.7 million, totaled about $107,000 that we will be returning to the state. And that is due to customer accounts that in the interim have been paid off, or those customers that have moved out of the area. I also want to note that the State Water Resource Control Board has opened the application period for the wastewater arrearages, and staff is in the process of pursuing approximately an additional $1.7 million to cover our wastewater arrearages. Under ongoing items as well, previously staff had provided this board with an informational update on the proposed 2022 Water Infrastructure Act ballot initiative. I wanted to make you aware that the sponsors of the ballot initiative have declared that they are not moving forward with the initiative, primarily due to the fact that they were not able to raise sufficient funds to undertake a campaign. They needed about $10 million to secure the necessary 1 million signatures needed to qualify for the ballot in November 2022. Under items of interest to the board, I wanted to share with you that last week I had a meeting with the Pechanga Tribal Councilman, Mr. Mark Luker. We had a good conversation, and he shared with me the tribe's intent to further develop properties that they've recently acquired. And specifically, they recently acquired approximately 100 acres along the future extension of Anza Road. They are planning to develop that property into dwelling units for the tribal members, up to 200 single-family dwelling units. And he asked for EMWD's support and accommodation of sewer service. In fact, we do have a meeting later this week with the tribe's engineering consultant to start working on those details of providing sewer service to the tribe for their proposed development project. Under item of interest as well regarding advocacy for statewide investments in storage and conveyance infrastructure, on February 7th, the Western Riverside Council of Governments issued a letter to the Metropolitan Water District General Manager urging greater advocacy for state investments in storage and conveyance infrastructure. Related to that, on February 11th, I attended a meeting hosted by Western Municipal Water District that included a number of general managers from regional water agencies, including Orange County Water District, Inland Empire Utilities Agency, San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District, Rancho, California Water District, Elsinore, and Three Valleys. And the purpose of the discussion was to brainstorm on opportunities to collaborate and build a coalition to better advocate for much needed state investments in water storage and conveyance infrastructure. The general managers decided to develop a white paper that clearly articulates the issues that we want to advocate for. And finally, under items of interest, I wanted to share with the board that last Friday, President Pauley, Director Corona, and Director Armstrong and I had the opportunity to meet with Congressman Daryl Issa in Temecula. It was a very productive meeting. We had the opportunity to thank Congressman Issa for his support of EMWD South Ferris desalination federal funding request this year, whereby we were successful in securing $4.5 million via the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We also had an opportunity to talk about water resiliency and water reliability projects, specifically EMWD's purified water replenishment program and other investments that would be important for for the local community. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Mr. Armstrong? On the item with the Changa Indian Tribe, would this development receive water via the agreement that was reached a few years, the settlement a couple of years ago, and the annexation and area into Metairie? Would this be part of that? Would you be receiving water via that?
In my conversation with Mr. Luker, he indicated that he's engaging conversations with Rancho California Water District for water supply. I don't believe the extension of service area agreement would necessarily apply to this development. Okay. This is in proximity, not too far from the existing tribal reservation. And I believe there's Rancho California Water Distribution Infrastructure in proximity to the property acquired. So the water service will be via Rancho. I don't believe that agreement necessarily applies in this case.
And then I just wonder if you could kind of follow up on the status of where that agreement is. I've just heard that it's kind of stalling, and I mean, it's where it's at. You know, I know there's pets involved, we're involved, Rancho's involved.
We will follow up with Rancho, absolutely. I know a few months back we did have check-in meetings that we participated in, but I will follow up with RCWD.
Other questions, Director Pauley?
No, I just wanted to note, Joe, that during our conversations with Congressman Issa, he seemed to indicate he would be willing to put, I don't know what the new proper name is, and we used to call them earmarks, in for some Eastern projects, especially out in wine country, if we had some good projects. So I'd just like to note that.
Great. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Mick, any report today?
Nothing this morning.
Yeah.
I would only report that Deputy General Manager Laura Nomura and members of the finance team are attending the Municipal Finance Officers Conference in San Diego this week.
Yeah.
Good morning. Yes, one item. Yesterday, staff met with Metropolitan for a status update on the completion of the Paris Valley Pipeline. The Paris Valley Pipeline is a 96-inch pipeline that will run from Mills Water Treatment Plant south or along Alessandro Boulevard, south along the 215, and ultimately will deliver more treated water into Eastern's and Western's service areas. MET has completed the majority of the 6.5-mile pipeline, with the exception of approximately a 3,000-foot segment that crosses the 215 freeway. Due to encountering high groundwater levels during the original construction, they put the project on hold to identify alternative measures for crossing the 215. The revised approach is nearing completion. They've identified a tunneling method facilitated by the installation of four vertical shafts. MET has pre-qualified contractors to perform this work, as they've identified or they acknowledge the complexity of it. They anticipate advertising for construction this spring, with construction being completed in about mid-2024. And this does align with our demand projections and when we need these facilities online.
Morning. We had a couple events last week. One of them occurred just south and west of Merino Beach and Cottonwood in Merino Valley. KB Homes is starting a development there, and one of their contractors was beginning rough grading and hit one of our 24-inch water lines with a dozer. It wound up draining Pettit Tank, and we had an outage of about 15 hours for about 24 customers while we made the repair. So we got everything fixed, got folks online, and we'll be submitting the invoice to the contractor to cover the repairs and the lost water. Also, last week, we had a sewer line in the Red Hawk community plug with grease, and about 3,200 gallons estimated sewer went to a storm drain that drains into the golf course area around the community. The golf course is used as drainage and stormwater runoff. So just due to the area around there, there was already standing water and some wildlife, and you know, including frogs and things in the standing water. So we were unable to recover the water, you know, without risking harming the wildlife there. So we posted signs, we took some water quality samples, just sure everything was fine. And that was the end of that event. So, that's it.
Questions? Item four, consent calendar. Do any board members want to pull anything off the calendar for individual action? And I will accept the motion and second for approval for items 4A through 4D. Austin, move. Would you administer the roll call, please? Mm-hmm.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. That takes us to item 5, action calendar. 5A, approve and adopt Dunlap Drive Recycled Water Pipeline Project Initial Study Mitigated Negative Declaration and Mitigation Monitoring Reporting Program.
Morning, directors. Here to present the CEQA document for the Dunlap Drive Recycled Water Pipeline Replacement Project. The purpose of the project is to replace a section of pipeline, deteriorated pipeline, new recycled water conveyance from the district's Paris Valley facility to the North Trumbull storage pond. The features of the project include replacement of 2,000 linear feet of 36-inch pipeline, jack and bore under the San Jacinto River, installation of a 48-inch casing under the river in which the pipeline would be placed, and then slurry fill the existing pipeline in place. For project location, see on this regional location map that the project site is located east of the 215 and immediately north of Ellis Avenue. Focusing in, see that the project site begins near the intersection of Dunlap Drive and Ellis Avenue in the south, and then continues north under the river where it pops out and connects with an existing EMWD pipeline north of the river. Staff had an initial study mitigated neg deck prepared to address the impacts of the proposed project. And the conclusion of that analysis was that mitigation would be required for the 5 impact areas that you see here on this slide. All of the impacts are temporary construction related impacts that go away after construction is completed. And then all the project impacts are less than significant after mitigation. For the public review summary, we consulted with area tribes prior to sending the document out for public review. We consulted with Pechanga, Saboba, and Rincon Band of Luseno Indians. And then we also consulted with the Agua Caliente Band of Cuya Indians. Sent the document out for a 30-day public review period from November 4th to December 6th. Posted notices in the Press Enterprise. We sent the document out to agencies and adjacent landowners. And then we made the document available on our website and here at our administrative offices during the comment period. One comment letter was received from California Department of Fish and Wildlife, which resulted in minor changes to the biological resource mitigation that's in the document. That comment letter and the EMWD response to that comment letter is included in the final document, which is part of the board packet. Staff recommendation is to adopt the proposed resolution approving the initial study mitigated neg deck and the mitigation monitoring and reporting program for the Dunlap Drive Recycled Water Pipeline Project. Includes the staff presentation. If there's any questions, be happy to answer.
Any questions?
Second.
Austin moves and Armstrong second. Roll call.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
5A passes unanimously. 5B, approve and adopt the Paris North Groundwater Monitoring Wells Project Initial Study Mitigated Negative Declaration and Mitigation Monitoring Reporting Program.
The purpose of this project is the siting, construction, and operation of monitoring wells within a defined area for the Paris North program. The project will result in long-term monitoring of groundwater quality in the cities of Moreno Valley and Paris. Features of this project include up to 16 four-well clusters, which totals 64 wells for the project, each of which would be 12-inch diameter. Four-inch steel casing would be inserted into each. They would be drilled with sonic or mud rotary drilling techniques, and the wells would be drilled during the daytime hours. Each of the well clusters would take approximately 8 weeks to construct. This exhibit shows the distribution of sites that we analyzed in the CEQA document for this project. The project itself would result in 16 sites being used for well clusters. We analyzed 21 different sites in case some of the sites fell out. This exhibit shows an example of a well cluster footprint. The lower left-hand corner of the southwest corner of the parcel, this example shows what the permanent easement would look like, a 60 by 20 foot rectangular area inside which are the four monitoring wells for this cluster. So this example, this would be monitoring well 7A to 7D inside the permanent easement, and then it would be ingress and egress to and from the permanent easement. This represents one of the clusters. There would be 16 of these constructed as part of the project. Staff had a initial study mitigated negative declaration prepared for this project, and the analysis concluded that mitigation would be required for the six impact areas that you see on this slide. And again, these are all construction related. There's no operational impacts, which means they're temporary impacts that would go away after construction. All the project impacts are less than significant after mitigation. For the public review summary for this one, we consulted with area tribes, including Pechanga Band of Luseno Indians and the Rincon Band of Luseno Indians. We then sent the document out for a 30-day public review period from December 10th to January 10th. Put a notice in the Press Enterprise. We sent notices out to area, to agencies, and to adjacent residents. We made the document available on our website and at our administrative offices for public review. One comment letter was received from an area resident during the comment period. It resulted in no change to the initial study mitigated NAICDEC. And that comment and our response to the comment is included in the final document, which is part of the board package. Staff recommendation is to adopt the proposed resolution approving the initial study mitigated NAICDEC and the mitigation monitoring and reporting program for the Paris North Groundwater Monitoring Wells Project. And that concludes staff presentation for this item, and I'd be happy to.
Question. The each of these clusters are, the one that you showed us was on private property.
Correct.
First picture looked like it was within a right of way. Do they all have to be within private property or?
There was a previous iteration of this project. I think it goes back to 2019 or 2020. At that time, there was 10 monitoring wells, and they were all going to be located within the public right of way. Through discussions with the state and ongoing design issues, the project was revised to have the clusters now all located on individual parcels outside the public road right of way. So the exhibit that I showed with the 21 different properties are all parcels not included within public road right of way.
Well, and why are aesthetics affected?
Oh, that has to do with lighting during construction. If there's going to be spillover to adjacent residents, okay. How is it that we're going to take care of that? So a construction, temporary construction related impact.
Good question. Motion?
None for me.
Okay.
I'll make the motion.
Corona moves.
I'll second.
Austin second. Roll call.
Dr. Record?
Aye.
Dr. Crono?
Aye.
Dr. Slauson?
Aye.
Dr. Armstrong?
Aye.
Dr. Pauly?
Aye.
5B passes unanimously. 5C, approve and authorize a water supply assessment for the Patterson.
All right, I'm back. So it's, this next item for your consideration is a WSA for, as just mentioned, the Patterson and Nance project. And going into, just starting with some background on WSAs. So under SB 610 and 221, water supply assessments are requested by a land use agency in support of the preparation of a environmental impact report. When certain size thresholds are exceeded for a project. And so in this case, we got a request from the City of Paris, and Duke Realty is looking to develop a roughly 770,000 square foot warehouse building. So this exceeds the floor space threshold of the regulation. And this project is going to be located south of Harley Knox Boulevard to the east of the 215 freeway. So just for reference, it's just to the south of the reserve base. And the site is about 34 acres in size. And so the regulation allows us to reference the projections that we made in our urban water management plan when evaluating the sufficiency of our water supplies. So the graph that I'm showing on this slide here, the left bar, shows the breakdown of the land use and demands that we projected when we did our 2020 urban water management plan. So you can see that this site, we anticipated mostly heavy industrial land use and associated water demands. With this project coming in as a warehouse, you see the projected demands as the right bar on the slide. So you can see we're well within the demands that were considered when we did our last UWMP. And furthermore, when you look at cumulatively all the WSAs that we've done since the completion of our last urban water management plan, we overall remain well within the limits of the demands that we considered at that time. And just a couple more slides for additional context. When we did our demand projections in the urban water management plan, just as a conservative planning factor, we did not project water use at current levels of water use efficiency. We kind of have about 15% higher than what we're actually seeing. So again, these projections are going to be very conservative, and we expect that the water use will be lower than what we projected. And then just some final context, I wanted to bring up the analysis that was done by Metropolitan to meet the requirements of the Urban Water Management Plan Act on as well. And so they show a surplus supply capacity under both the normal year hydrology and a five-year drought hydrology. And so based on all of those factors, the staff recommendation is to approve and authorize the WSA for this project. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Make the motion to approve.
Director Armstrong moves. Director Crono seconds.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Crono?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. 5D, adopt proposed resolution amending resolution number 5111, Eastern Municipal Water District Administrative Code, as it relates to index adjustment Board of Directors compensation for 2020.
Thank you, Director Record, members of the board. Per EMWD's Ordinance 70-7, the compensation for board members shall be increased annually, if so determined, by a vote of the Board of Directors and in accordance with the provisions of the Water Code. I should note that the last time there was an adjustment to the board compensation was December of 2017, so it's been 4 years since this adjustment has been considered and approved by the board. Back in December 2017, the board did adjust compensation up to the $223 per service day or per service meeting. In preparation for this item, staff did conduct a survey of other agencies' board compensation, which is presented in the table provided to you in the board letter. As you can see there, from the data collected, EMWD's compensation for the board members is towards the bottom of that range. There are a number of agencies that, in fact, provide compensation at $300 or more compared to the current EMWD compensation of $223. Over the past 4 years, there has been a cost of living adjustment approved by the board to EMWD staff. And as presented in the board letter, the various cost of living adjustments are summarized in the table, and the aggregate of which is approximately 13.9% of cost of living adjustment that this board has essentially foregone when it comes to board compensation. So our recommendation, and there are a couple of options for the board, but our options that we've looked at is, one, the board to consider retroactively adjusting compensation based on the 4 years whereby this board has foregone any kind of adjustment, and that would be an adjustment, as I mentioned, approximately 14%. Another option is to simply look at the 2022 adjustment that was recently approved by this board, 4.5%, based again on CPI increases. And I think we're all aware of inflationary pressures, and I think it's been in the news over the last many weeks. Staff recommendation is to for the board to adjust the board compensation by the 4.5% that was recently approved for all of the staff of EMWD. Our recommendation is also twofold. The second part is that we would like, on a going forward basis, to bring this item forward to the board for consideration at the same time that we bring forward the item for the cost of living for the rest of the staff. I think it's appropriate to discuss this matter alongside consideration for cost of living for the balance of the staff. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions the board may have. And the attached resolution, as you saw there, indicates a effective date. Should the board decide to approve this, the rate would increase to $233 from $223, and it will be effective as of March 2022. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
You and I discussed at our meeting. We just learned that the CPI was 7.5%. All of the wholesale prices. So certainly, I think 4.5 is easily justifiable, considering we did not have any increase.
Yeah, just a comment. Having been on this board now for just a little over the year, I would just like to say that I recognize that this board is a very engaged, active board. Our president, I can't imagine, you know, there's a lot of demands on our board president, and they far exceed the number of meetings that, you know, he's being compensated for. And I know a lot of our other board members the same thing. And when you look at the comparison to the other agencies, an increase is definitely warranted, I think, based off of that. But I also think that, we're in the middle still of coming out of a pandemic and inflation and all the other pressures that we're faced with, metropolitan rate increases and et cetera. And I know this isn't a big part of the budget, but I'm not sure that it's the right time to do it. An increase bill just because of the environment that we're in. But I think it's more than warranted. I think the proposal, the staff recommendation is less than warranted. And I would like to just say I appreciate, and I would like to compliment these board members for all the work that they do on behalf of our customers.
Anyone else?
Well, I agree with Jeff, but I think it is warranted. Best districts that are impressive and do a lot of work. And there is a lot of work for board members. I would support them.
Polly?
I would concur. I think it's warranted. I'm hesitant to take a pay increase in the middle of a term, though. I when I signed up for this job, I knew exactly what the pay was. I would be hesitant. I would vote to put this in place, but I personally will not take it until I'm reelected to another term. And I would like to see if the other board members might want to go along with that proposal that we put this in place, but not have it implemented until a new term for an individual board member starts.
Director Slauson?
Yes, I would just comment. I think that certainly that Director Pauly, that's certainly within his right, and I've done that in the past before as well. I would just caution the board that we don't want to get into a position where the only people that would care to run for a seat on this board the ones who can afford to take a loss because they're, or otherwise, they're wealthy or retired or in an inferior position. Because otherwise, the working class, they end up taking a loss, they're going to look at it and say, or to give money to each money, loss of money. Next point. Can I support the recommendations that we visited as well.
Director, for record, if I can maybe add a response to a question that was raised. In terms of the cost associated with this proposed adjustment, it would be a, you know, assuming all the board members attended the maximum 10 days per month, it would be a nominal amount of collectively of $500 a month. Cool.
Thank you. So my opinion is that, and I agree with all the comments, especially Director Armstrong, that this board does work very hard, and I'm very proud of this board and this agency as well. And I think that there are always reasons not to have an increase, and I think it's always going to be there. Just to be clear, if a board member decides they don't want to take the increase, that's not an issue, correct? They can happen. Have it implemented whenever they care to have that implemented. Is that correct?
Yes, Director Record. We can accommodate if that is any individual director's desire.
Me personally, I enjoy very much working on behalf of this district here and at Metropolitan, and I do spend a lot of time that isn't reflected in meeting. I don't have a problem with that. I'll make a motion to approve staff recommendation. So we have second by
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Thank you. Item six, information items. We have none. Even file except the motion and second for items. 7A through 7B.
I'll move the items.
We have a motion by Director Pauly and a second by Director Corona. Roll call vote.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Item 8, calendar review and director attendance reports.
Good morning. Good morning, President Pauly, Vice President Record, and members of the board. Here to do your calendar review. I have two items of interest for you this morning. First one being a save the date that we received for the Riverside County Water Task Force virtual speaker series. I have a topic, which is tapping into funding opportunities. The speakers are not yet announced, so it is forthcoming, but page 5 includes these details that we have so far anyway. I do have President Pauly as RSVPing for that. And again, that's Friday, February 25th. And on March 10th, we have the AQUA 2022 Virtual Legislative Symposium. And it is has a keynote speaker of Assemblymember Rebecca Bauer Cahan, and that can be found on page 6. Moving on to page 2, we have the board's calendar for the next few weeks with their meetings. followed by page 3 with the upcoming scheduled events. The board meetings are all on schedule for the next 3 months. And the board committee meetings we have, I just wanted to make a note of the operations and engineering committee meeting on February 24th. Note the earlier start time is 3 p.m., just a reminder. Moving on to page 4, we have the joint interagency meetings, and those are all on schedule. And Monday is the district holiday for President's Day. Are there any questions or additions? No? Okay, seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Concludes my report.
Meetings, Director Armstrong?
Yes, I attended the CalDESAL virtual conference. I think their theme of it was DESAL equals resiliency. And I thought they did a really good job of laying out the need and the importance of DESAL, including ocean DESAL. Talked a lot about climate change as one of those reasons why we should ensure that we have DESAL in our mix of supplies. Talked a lot about technology and innovations to kind of help bring down the cost of ocean desal, as well as being more environmentally friendly. So I thought it was a really good, informative, educational conference. The meeting with Representative Issa was discussed, and I just thought it was a really good meeting, a real good opportunity to build relationship. I think our general manager really connected well with the congressman, and thought it was really, really a beneficial effort. And I thought bringing up the wine country sewer was a really good idea. And so hopefully that might, you know, in the future. And then the meeting with Eastern and Elsinore Valley was Monday, and that was a good meeting. You know, a med update by our staff, COVID, and then kind of some follow-up on the regional resiliency coordination efforts between Eastern and Western and Elsinore and Rancho. And then it sounds like that was virtual, but it sounds like our next meeting may be back in person again. So that was a really good meeting.
Rancho California Water District board meeting, short meeting, kind of uneventful. Interesting news at Rancho is that both their assistant managers have taken on other jobs. Rick Aragon moved up to Alaska. Eva Pleitzer recently took a job with San Diego Water Authority. Megan Valencia also has a job with the Authority. So they've got some spots still, pretty important spots still here at Rancho. And Joe and Jeff covered the meetings with ISA and
Yes, I did not attend the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. In fact, I'm not sure if I wasn't able to find anything on the website or a way to connect. Had my monthly update meeting with Joe, I mentioned earlier, but we discussed. And at SAPA yesterday, we authorized recruitment for a new auditor. The current auditor is going to quit doing auditing. And we discussed the disadvantaged community involvement program, primarily to provide technical assistance to related to drought relief. APA has $5 million and they're going to collect the five. And one of them is the Box Springs Mutual Water Company, which is in Moreno Valley, and it's a new tank, elimination of the two smaller tanks that don't meet OSHA requirements, and some other improvements on their site. But I hope they do that. And
Holly?
Yes, I attended the WRCOG meeting. That was pretty standard. We had a great discussion valley-wide on our recycled system and updated the management there on what we're doing, especially in the French Valley area of adding some new parks and greenscape. Great meeting with Joe, the general manager, as always. Was not able to attend the Winchester MAT meeting. We've covered Representative Issa. Again, Joe did a fantastic job of presenting some of the opportunities that the congressman can get involved with in the district. And finally, was at the initial bird walk with the Audubon Society last Saturday. Great turnout and a lot of interest in people very appreciative of all the infrastructure we put in to that facility. And had some suggestions and ideas on a few other infrastructure projects we could do out there that I will follow up with Joe on. So that was my report.
Thank you. For myself, the MWD meetings, 7th and 8th committee and board, I would say the two biggest items. So number one, it was the kickoff of the budget discussion. Long presentation, a lot of information. We have a number of workshops scheduled. Process. The other was a discussion about recommendations from the Shaw Law Group on the climate assessment at Walton. For that to come. EMWD meetings, monthly update with general manager, always helpful. And Diamond Valley Lake Memorandum of Intent Committee discussion. It was mainly a discussion about future leadership as some of the members move on. That item 9 is director's comments, future agenda items. Director Pauly.
I just want to say thank you for Director Record for chairing the meeting today. I was out of town. I'm glad I was able to participate, and thank you for doing a good job and bringing it in under an hour. So thank you.
a lot of pressure, but it's worth it. We have no closed session items, and with that, we will adjourn the meeting to regular meeting on Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022 at 9 a.m. Everyone. Thank you.